It's a brand new show.
You're listening to Taking It Down, and we're the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Discussion Podcast. I'm your host and serve as editor-in-chief of the website. I'm Blaine Duncan. Today, we're going to talk about a show that missed us on the first go-around, Lodge 49. We're going to talk the Apple TV Plus show, Calls, is the latest installation of The Challenge, and some of what Donovan's been reading. He's got some reading recommendations this week. Just a quick note that we'll be off next week, so no podcast next Tuesday. In the meantime, subscribe to this podcast, and don't forget to check out the website and our other podcasts we currently produce, This Song Sucks. But let's get on with it then. Joining me, as always, for a year now, Adam Morrow and Donovan Reinwald.
Have you heard about my new podcast?
No, I'm eager.
It's called This Podcast Sucks.
It's a critique of Josh K.
I listened to this one. I'm just playing this one, and I kind of talk about what we talk about what we hate about it.
So we may not have a lot to say about our little coronavirus opening bit at this point, but I do have an adjunct question, which is maybe geared toward Donovan, maybe for both of you. What's your comfort level? What do you predict your comfort level will be going to see Black Widow in the theater on July 9th?
Did I get my vaccine yet?
Let's assume that is definitely the case. And Adam is well on his way to getting his second vaccine.
So. April 8th.
Do they do it in your arm or do they do it on your butt?
Arm for me.
You're not getting one of those Mississippi vaccines?
Is the butt the option?
Wink.
There's another.
it seems like a lot of the most risky, I mean, just from casual reading, I'm not an expert by any means, but it seems like a lot of the most risky activities were the things that people were doing anyway, like going out to eat, you know, sitting in a restaurant. So come July, you know, if I've got a shot and I'm wearing a mask, I'd love to go back to a movie theater.
What about you, Adam? Do you think? Something you and that Natalie would drag you to, if you guess her?
Maybe. I don't know about that movie specifically, but I don't know why in my head I think that as things continue to distribution goals keep getting beat, like they're kind of ahead of the schedule that had been set out, which is great.
Yeah, that's good.
At first I thought we'll return to normalcy maybe late in the summer, but I kind of feel like the starter gun is going to go off on the 4th of July. And it's just going to be, you know, barring some new strain kind of setback or something, that'll be the beginning of, hey, life is kind of back to normal. So, yeah, I mean, mid-July, I think I'm back in a movie theater.
Interesting. I was wondering, because the news this week is that Black Widow will finally be released in theaters and Disney Plus simultaneously. But, of course, there's the Disney Plus airing comes with a surcharge.
You got to pay the Disney tax.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's $30.
I don't have enough friends to make that worthwhile.
That's insane. $30? I mean, I guess if you have a whole family, if that's the angle, then that's kind of cheaper than going to the theater.
Yeah,
but
that's the only way it makes any sense.
Yeah.
Or if you're watching it with a couple of families, maybe. I don't know if you've had some people in your bubble.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how other people live.
Yeah, it's a mystery to me, too. I'm not sure if that fits our segment, The Lord's Coming Back Real Soon or not.
I don't know how other people live is always appropriate for The Lord's Coming Back Real Soon.
Adam, you've been talking to us recently off mic about a show that's gotten your attention, and you've even tweeted about it. You've took to Twitter for this one, so it must
be special.
I've
gotten on the Twitter.
Yeah, it's special. It once aired on AMC or maybe around this time last year or earlier. And it's now on Hulu for everyone to stream. That's Lodge 49, which I mentioned in the intro. What can you tell me about it? Is it a particularly spoiler sort of show? Can you avoid that?
It's funny because it is, but it isn't. Like, there's definitely plot elements, and they're kind of important as things cook along, but not really.
The only thing I keep reading is that it's got a lot of Big Lebowski vibes.
I was gonna say, do you find that the Big Lebowski could be spoiled? I mean, there are things that happen that you enjoy as they happen, but the majority of it is just kind of like living with the vibe,
Right. I think the brilliance of The Big Lebowski, much like The Big Sleep, is it is 100% spoiler proof. Like, you could tell me what happened and you still don't understand it because there's nothing to understand.
I will say that it starts out, you know, it alludes to The Crying of Lot 49, the Pynchon novel, and that's apparently referenced as an inspiration. We're in Long Beach, California. You meet immediately Dud, who's played by Wyatt Russell, who we're seeing a lot of him at the moment.
Oh yeah.
But he's wearing when you first meet him, he's on the beach and he's got a metal detector and he's attempting to raise some funds. Things are not, he's just classic California surfer kind of guy, but he has his foot is like in a Ziploc bag. So you figure out he has injured his foot in some way. You quickly piece together that he has a sister who's working a dead-end job at a kind of crappy restaurant, and their dad has died a year earlier, and they lost the family business, which was a pool repair thing. So it's very Southern California and very Big Lebowski, and it immediately gets fairly, words like mystic and spiritual get thrown around a lot these days, but I feel like this is a pretty mystical, spiritual show. In the same way that Big Lebowski was at moments, Dud finds his way. These kind of unusual set of circumstances lead him to park and wake up in front of where the title comes from, Lodge 49. It's a fraternal order of the Lynx lodge that he kind of barges into and finds this community of people. Thus starts the adventure.
And you're big on it.
I think it's incredible. I think it's super good. I think it sprawls at first. It's one of those shows. I don't want to say it's like a David Simon show. It's not that sprawling, but it's one of those shows where it seems like they just throw all the pieces on the table and you don't see any order to it for a few episodes. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you start to see, like, say he... Dud, everything kind of focuses on Dud as he bumbles through life, and he's just, his optimism cannot be contained and everything's going to work out. His sister is the opposite, and she's trying to be a realist and kind of pull him back in and protect him in a way. But he starts to meet people and all these connections start to be made and people know each other that don't realize that they know each other. All these kind of things start happening, and he is the center of this universe that starts being untied in a way. You know, they're kind of like working through all these connections, and that's him. But the lodge is based on a British guy who back in the day decided that he had figured out alchemy. So there's like this kind of weird, that whole world of, it's spiritual, but it's also, I don't know, it, you know, kind of goes in, not Masonic, but it's definitely kind of dipping its toe in that water. But at this point, the lodge is basically just a place where they drink beer and hang out. But there's a few true believers, and all of that stuff starts accelerating as time goes by.
How many episodes?
I'm totally sold.
It's 10 per season.
And was it two seasons? Because it got
canceled. Two seasons, yeah.
Cut off, right? Yeah, canceled. So
yeah, and I don't know. I don't know how it's going to happen. What's going to happen here at the end? Looks like it finished airing in October of 2019. You know, even if they were thinking of making another season, it to be picked up somewhere else. Again, I don't know how they land the plane, so maybe it ends in a tidy way, but if not, maybe as soon as I tweeted this, people responded and said like, oh, that was one of my favorite pandemic finds.
It got rave reviews from critics, and mm-hmm.
I don't know how I missed it.
Yeah, I was very aware of it. I just didn't carve out time, I guess.
And maybe that on the surface, it's not, you know, if you just read, like, I've got the, let's see what Wikipedia says here. It's very short. AMC describes the series as a modern fable set in Long Beach, California, about a disarmingly optimistic local ex-surfer, Dud, who's drifting after the death of his father and collapse of the family business. So that's not like, that doesn't necessarily set the hook for like must watch TV.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
I think I'm kind of like the worst viewer for these things too, because I'm just like, kind of have a nebulous list of things that, like, well, I'll get around to it when I feel like it. And I forget that, like, if you want something to be continue, you have to watch it.
Yeah, very true. Right?
You know, like on this real, like network TV is like real, you know, you actually have to sit down and watch it. Otherwise, it's not going to keep going.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, nobody making things wants it to be like a cult classic, right? Mm-hmm. That means it didn't go well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's great that people love it. And this, I feel like this is going to be, if it's not already, that kind of like cult show. That how did people not realize how good it was when it was on?
It's good to know it's on Hulu. I did not know it was on any streaming.
Yeah.
I'm shocked to find out it had a second season. I was certain it got canceled after its first.
No, second season. And I'm getting close to the end of the first. And it's good because they're hour-long episodes. Well, 42 to 56 is the official runtime.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. You know, it's a little more substantial, but I feel like a lot of shows lately have been very heavy, maybe relied on like a true crime element or something like that. And to step back and to still have something that's high quality, in my opinion, that doesn't rely on that kind of darkness, but is still doing things. You know, everyone is kind of, it's not this reductionist, but everyone is kind of an avatar for a different philosophical outlook. Like nobody's really, none of the characters in their lives are really where they want to be. You know, there's a strong element of kind of American dream discontent, especially with Dud and his sister. You know, she's so pessimistic and so, you know, she has all the potential in the world, is incredibly smart, but shoots herself in the foot to kind of keep herself in place. All of this plays against each other. It's really good. It's really good.
This sounds a lot like Zack Snyder's Justice League. Have you seen that?
I feel like we have discussed that. Yeah.
The thing I really like about Zack Snyder's Justice League is the lightness of his touch. You know, like if there's something symbolic or something that like he's like, yeah, I mean, you can kind of sense where he directs the viewer's attention. He doesn't beat you over the head with it, though. And that's what I love about Zack Snyder.
Isn't every member of the Justice League an avatar for one part of the American dream? Is that not how you guys viewed it?
You know, I view it as more of a metaphor for the human existence. You know, you've got like, you know, Wonder Woman, right? Like she's courage, right? You've got the Flash, right? Like he's the quickness of intelligence. You've got Batman, who's grumpy because he's horny all the time. You know, just the universal human experience.
Very Freudian there, yeah.
I don't know. We'll keep it in California, Southern California specifically. I think that you will like this basketball season of Last Chance U. I wrapped it last night. Despite its odd timing of release, I do recommend it. And I'll just quickly say why. The players are likable, and as is the coach, but all the coaches. So I'm interested if you get around to watching it on what you think about those storylines.
I'm sure I will get around to it. It's there's a lot going on right now. A lot to watch. So
there really is. We had a real hiatus on shows for like a month or so, and now it feels like we're so overwhelmed that none of us are watching the same thing.
Yeah, that's I kind of laughed to myself when you were introducing this week's episode. This is very much like we all did different things for the summer and came back together to talk about it. Usually we have like a unified front. Yeah, it's just a busy time between sports going on, you know, the actual basketball tournament, and yeah, just a lot of shows. I say that, but I'm watching a show that's 3 years old now. So,
but it was just one of those shows that I think we all missed, unless you just happen to be in tune with critics, I guess. It probably flew right by you, and it's a good recommendation, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's great. No, and I can't wait to watch. You know, I think the beauty, we talked about this last week, of the football Last Chance U is it just hit in the middle of the doldrums. You know, that like sports moment when baseball is the only thing on TV, which is fine. I know we have baseball fans, I'm sure. I love going to a game, but you know, if that's all that's on television, please give me some football. Please give me some other content. Whereas now there's just a lot going on, so I'm going to get to it. I'm excited.
It's a different vibe this season, obviously because it's basketball, but usually there is some bit of assholishness in the coach.
Of course.
Despite, other than the California football coach, he didn't really have a lot going on. But in this case, there's not that. But at the same time, he's still engaging and interesting. So, yeah, I will. I'll be interested to hear what you think when you start watching it. And it takes this one takes a couple episodes. It took me a couple episodes to realize it's actually a pretty good season, especially toward the end. It gets the emotions are very, very heightened.
Interesting. I like it when a show kind of plants the seeds early that you don't realize are going to kind of tug at the heartstrings later, and then they pull on them. Mm-hmm. That's a good.
Yep.
Not a conventional technique. Yeah, Ted Lasso probably did this best of anything that I've seen recently, where it hits hard at the end and you didn't realize how hard it's going to hit. But
yeah,
I'm into it.
I want to tell you about a show that I feel like wasn't on a lot of people's radar that I picked up on from Apple TV Plus, a show titled Calls. The premise is that it is a series of episodes about these interconnected phone calls between people. And all you get on the screen are the dialogue and this odd bit of visuals that are very reminiscent of Windows Media Player back when you'd put in your favorite CD.
Hell yeah.
In your computer. So you get like sound waves, but the dialogue's typed as it's being said. It's which doesn't sound incredibly captivating. And I don't want to spoil anything because I didn't know anything going in other than it was supposed to be eerie. And it is. So that description may sound really lame, but it's a captivating show. It's based on a French show, which I think has the same name in French.
Oh, Les Calls?
Maybe. You've convinced me that it would be it. It would be an easy show to spoil, so I'm just going to say that the first episode has a guy who is calling from L.A. to his girlfriend in New York in order to break it off with her since she hasn't joined him on the West Coast. And from there, she sees some odd things going on that she's talking to him about. That's really all I think I'll say. And I've had trouble thinking about animation sometimes or getting into animation in terms of... I've really had trouble with describing animation in terms of voice acting. My head just can't wrap around that in some cases, but... This one helped me make that connection to what voice acting really can do. This one, the first episode is carried wholly by Pedro Pascal and Karen Gillan. So they've got big name actors doing these. I think that second episode's got Aaron Taylor Johnson involved, and an episode down the road's got Aubrey Plaza. And they just sell what's happening quite well. It would be a struggle to do that, I think, without getting to show your face or your body language. So it's pretty amazing how this show sucks you in despite any visuals beyond that. Besides some of those visuals look like the alien writing from Arrival.
It's good stuff. It sounds like such a bold show to make.
It's a little bit on the let's put a podcast on TV kind of feel. Which I do not like story-based podcasts, but that works well because it makes it easy to watch and digest on your phone if you have to, which I usually never do with shows. I read several comments on a message board that said, this show works perfectly if you put your earbuds in and watch it on your phone. And I thought, okay. And it really did have a different sound feel.
Is really interesting because just the way you're describing it, this is like, wow, if only Quibi had done this, like maybe.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I forgot about Quibi.
But like, I've never heard of like a TV show where, you know, I'm hearing you describe it and I'm like, I could watch this on my phone and it would be a different experience and not a worse experience.
Yes, exactly. And I'll go ahead and throw out this other alluring fact about it. The episodes are like 15 minutes.
Perfect. Ooh, a quick bite.
Yeah, I mean, you can't sit and watch a phone conversation, I think, any longer than 20 minutes, which I think are the longest episodes. So the other day I was at work during lunch and I had, you know, 20 minutes and I thought, well, this episode's 15. And I just sat and watched it with earbuds in and just as effective as it was watching it at home.
Nice.
Cool.
So it's on Apple TV Plus. I know a lot of people may not have that or are even aware of it, but yeah. Let's take a break. And on the other side, I'm going to get Adam to break down some challenge stuff. We hope you continue to join us each week by subscribing to this podcast. We release every Tuesday morning, bright and early. We will have the next week off, though, so a heads up there. And as you're scrolling through some podcasts, though, check out This Song Sucks, which is a group of three musicians who break down a song that they dislike in comedic fashion. Also up on the site each Thursday right after the challenge is the head writer T.D. Wood's breakdown of that episode. So find that each week on the website, The Alabama Take. All right, let's get back into our show. Okay, we're back from our little break there, short break each week. I want to give Donovan the floor for a second. If you're a regular listener, you know quite well that Donovan fills the role of being our resident movie expert, more so than me, definitely. And he really keeps his ear to the ground of literature as much as any of us, particularly some of the more classic books and writing, for lack of a better term there. Donovan, you've been reading something kind of intriguing, I think. Well, tell us more.
I will do my best. So Tor Essentials, which is an imprint of Tor, which I think is an imprint of Macmillan, that's T-O-R, is a fairly new mini line that is reprinting mostly science fiction and fantasy, usually from the 90s or 2000s, although I think some went back to the 80s. And they, a little earlier this year, just reissued The Best of R.A. Lafferty, which has been completely out of print in the U.S. for a while. The only edition that you could get was a Gallants, which is a United Kingdom imprint. And in the introduction, R.A. Lafferty was an engineer, electrical engineer, I think. He served in World War II, didn't have a great time, lifelong bachelor. He must have been a huge weirdo. He probably was.
So he doesn't write in a particular genre?
You could extremely loosely say he writes science fiction and fantasy, but kind of in the way Ray Bradbury does or did.
Yeah.
Where it was like, I'm not really that interested in this, right? Like, I'm going to use the setting. I'm more interested in the setting, right? So, like, maybe he can talk about... maybe something fantastic's happening and it's a way to talk about how people came to America. Maybe something's fantastic is happening and it's a way to talk about, what happened to the Native Americans in Oklahoma. Maybe something fantastic is happening and it's a way to talk about colonialism. And that makes it like sound much harder and heavier than it is. He's got stories in here that'll raise the hairs on the back of your neck. He's got story, and the weirdest thing about reading these stories is you read two or three, and you're kind of like, I know what kind of author. Like, he's fine. He's a huge weirdo. Whatever. These are what the stories are going to be like. Then he throws you a couple more curveballs. So I can't recommend it highly enough. Your mileage may vary. I think if you are able to tune into his wavelength, which is just don't try and figure it out, just read it, see where he's going to take you. He is really strange and really original.
Is there a particular reason why he wasn't printed for a while in America?
Nobody reads him.
Huh.
He's extremely obscure. Like, he's one of those writers where, like, if you looked, the reason I got turned on him is because other writers would say he's the best at what he did. But he mostly published in... science fiction and fantasy magazines, which were not exactly high art. And like, it was like he was almost too weird for science fiction, but not respectable enough. You know, he wasn't publishing in the New Yorker or whatever.
Yeah.
So, he's, I think, super neglected. I think, no, that's somebody else who I thought there was something with his estate, but I think it was just, he's really odd, and he pretty much only wrote short stories. His one novel is published by the University of Oklahoma. He was really interested in the Native American history of Oklahoma and the way the land was taken away. And I don't know, man. He's a weirdo.
Sounds fascinating. Remind me one more time the name of the collection.
So his name is R.A. Lafferty, L-A-F-F-E-R-T-Y. And I knew that I was sold on, so I'm not a big crier for like books or movies or anything, but there's a story that he wrote that was so odd and worked on me so well that when it came to the ending, it's about as close to crying over a story as I've come for a long time. It was absolutely snuck up on me. He's great. He's super strange.
How many stories are in the collection that's been released?
Oh, good question. That's kind of, you know, the thing about his stories is most of them are really very short. Huh. There's probably 10 to 15 in there. I'd have to look it up.
Does the collection have a title?
Yeah, it's titled The Best of R.A. Lafferty.
Okay.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah, and, when I Googled, he's getting a lot of news hits here. Like Wired has an article titled, Who is R.A. Lafferty and Is He the Best Sci-Fi Writer Ever?
Wow, that's high praise.
One of the weirdest things about his stuff is the first three stories, I thought, oh, he's all right at writing dialogue. Then about five or six stories in, I was like, oh, he's as good at writing dialogue as he wants to be. Like at any point, like he's as good at writing whatever he's doing in the story as he wants to be, because he'll just change his style up so much. And yeah, there are some kind of ones that, you know, like you sit and read them and you're like, yeah, this is good. This is fine. I kind of get what's going on here. And then there are some that will just standouts, I think, for me, were the stories Ride a Tin Can, 900 Grandmothers, and Continued on Next Rock, which is a very kind of strange and foreboding story. He's also, it's funny, we were talking about Pynchon. I would say after reading him, he is not 100% different from the works of Mr. Thomas Pynchon, just with his love of language. And like he always gives his characters these ridiculous names, and it's yeah, he's worth checking out, especially if you like that kind of Pynchon wavelength of science or literary fiction.
Interesting.
That's a good recommendation. Let's shift to what happens maybe even on the opposite end of the spectrum from that. We love to talk about the MTV staple, The Challenge, and T.D. Wood, our head writer, does a wonderful job of recapping and analyzing every episode each Thursday. But I want to unpack a little bit more of this week's episode with Adam. Adam, give me some general thoughts on the events of our most recent episode from Wednesday.
I'll tell you, Blaine, I don't think we're shifting gears at all. I think this is an underappreciated gem of our time that's doing some heavy lifting here. I will say that this is not, and maybe this is my, if you read the article that TD wrote and that Blaine and I add our confessionals to, you already know that I zeroed in on pretty much one person that I have a lot of scorn for over the last, it's only been on two seasons, and that's Mr. Fessy. I think Fessy and his big brother cohort are dragging the show down. I don't think they're very interesting TV characters. Maybe they're interesting people off camera, but they don't bring the same, you know, you want to watch people like CT, who is an insane physical competitor, but you also watch them. I mean, he said on the show before, he feels like the audience watched him grow up. You know, there's still that element of real world kind of stuff with people who've been through programs like that or who were cast in that way. And I've bitched about this on the show before. So all that said, the confrontations this week, the actual game drama, feel terrible for Anissa. She's always the bridesmaid, never the bride, right? That old cliche of like, she gets so close to the final and then gets cut. She's been the last person cut just a heartbreaking amount of times. But the main drama was between the fellows, Fessy and CT. What'd you make of it, Blaine? Because you kind of been a Fessy guy at times.
He fell out of favor with me a little bit from the party scene where he was kind of, he was doing the self-aggrandizing that you had noticed before I had picked up on it, and he was doing it much more blatantly. So he kind of fell out of favor with me a little. So I don't know. I will see how he continues to act the rest of the season. If that gets more bloated, that attitude. I did watch a couple of minutes of their after show on YouTube, and he really tried to play down his, would you call it a confrontation with CT?
I think CT would call it a confrontation.
I do too. And he tried to walk that down, but then they would air the clip, and it, and Anissa calls him out on it because there's several of them on the Zoom call. And he's still like, no, I was just trying to talk to him, but he turned it into a more aggressive approach.
It was funny to watch the reactions in that scene of Anissa and Nani and Leroy. They all had some pretty choice confessional quotes afterwards, but especially Nani and Anissa, their faces, like they've seen whatever switch happens in CT that makes him in previous seasons get kicked off for, you know, almost putting people in the hospital. Yeah. They saw that and their faces changed as well. Like, shit, here we go again. This is not only like, are they going to fight, but also it's going to be frightening when it happens. I thought Nani had a great quote about Fessy is the guy who, and she's talking about her own partner here, who she's none too happy with at the moment, but Fessy is the guy who would hire a hitman to kill you. CT would do it with his bare hands. They're just cut from a different cloth, different dudes.
Now that we're down to only 10 competitors, I want you to give me some quick thoughts on each one as I name them. Not quite lightning round, but just what you have on your mind. So maybe semi-lightning round response. Okay. Let's go Kyle.
You know, Kyle is the dark horse of every season that he's on. He is tougher physically than he gets credit for. Mentally, he's incredibly tough. I joked when we had the big round table before last season's finale. It's like the hangover effect with Kyle. This dude has made mistakes in the evening and still hadn't, you know, gotten up in the morning to go to his workout and just suffered through it or suffered through a shift or whatever it is. This guy has a suffer meter that's just off the charts and just seems unbothered. You know, I think of him and Fessy standing out in the cold during last season's final. And he's just kind of chipper, just talking to him. You know, he wore Fessy out. And I don't know if that was strategy to keep him awake and to keep Fessy miserable, but well played.
I think it's partly that Kyle just can't shut up.
He can't shut up. I think he's funny. I think my number one thing with if I like a reality star or not is if they're self-aware.
Yeah. And he's 100%.
He is, and he's playing to the camera, he's playing it up, and he seems to get great joy out of stirring the pot, but he owns it. You know, that's like a bananas thing. He even wears a shirt that says stir the pot, but he doesn't always own it in person, and Kyle 100% does. I like Kyle.
Let's go partners then. I'll name partners. His partner now is Amber B.
I think she's underrated. I don't know. There's 10 people left, right? She, and I wrote this week, didn't have a confessional. And it seems like just players per minute, you would have her on screen individually at some point.
That was odd, yeah.
She was on screen more earlier this season. Maybe they're giving her a break because she set it out for one thing. So she didn't experience the skydiving, which I thought was a super cool daily. They've kind of been knocking those out of the park the last few weeks. But maybe she's an underrated, you know, she looks pretty strong for her size, and maybe she's one of those people that can just run for days. So the longer she stays around, maybe she could be a threat in a final. I don't know. Maybe the endurance is there.
She annoys me.
As a character, yeah. I mean, all of her drama was so self-contained to the rookie community, as it were, that I wish that they showed her mixing it up a bit more with the known quantities. You know, you almost kind of measure people's personality against. It's like, well, I know Nani and CT and Anissa and all these people. So like, how do they interact with them? And you kind of judge them on that. And that really hasn't happened that much. Mm-hmm. I don't know. She's a question mark.
Yeah, she is. So Fessy, you got any more to say about him?
No, I don't like Fessy.
All right. How about his partner, who is now Nani?
I think Nani is a very tragic case of a person who is good at this game, good at all that it entails, but has to have a partner to lift her up, which is a real shame. She could do it on her own. She is kind of a chameleon in that way, which is a bummer.
All right. CT?
No, he's...
Specifically this season?
He's been given a more complex storyline. Since his return, since he won on Invasion, he got a pretty clean edit. You know, this is the guy who was maybe past his physical prime, though he's still a beast, a specimen, you know, but not the same guy that he was in his 20s and early 30s. More complex edit this time, not just the clear cut. He's back. He's a dad. He's a good guy now. He kind of mixed it up a little bit more this time, which I enjoy the shades there, not just black and white.
Yeah, me too. His partner, Big T.
Love Big T.
Yeah?
I love Big T. I think she's a good sport about everything. Again, we talked about how her and CT by the fire that night was the most human thing that they've shown in a long time, and I think she has that in her, and she's... When she alludes to her backstory as a, you know, a refugee, that it's surprising when she starts telling you that, because she has such a posh, like very London accent. And then she tells you this complex story of her family and how she still feels a connection to all these things. And she's a fascinating person and a good sport. Yeah, I'm a big T fan. I will say she is much like Anissa. And we texted about this and wrote about it, that I don't understand how you could come on this show and not at least be able to run like a 5K or something.
Yeah. It annoys me to see her compete in things like running, because I do like her personality, but I just want her to be more dominant on the field.
I think she's pretty strong for her size too. I mean, she did, not that she had like a high bar to get over in the elimination this week, but she did a great job. She did what she had to do. And if she kind of just shored up the physical game, you know, when she first came on the show, it was like, she's super cute, bubbly personality, just a great person to have on camera, right? She keeps things fun. I think she could be a good competitor down the road. And it's been fun to watch her process of discovering that for herself.
What are her origins from reality TV?
You know, I'm actually not sure. A lot of these British folks who came in, you know, Kyle and her are kind of the holdovers, but Bear was among them.
Rogan?
Rogan. He had a buddy named Joss that was a big part of it. Georgia was one of the ladies. Yeah, they all came in and they have these backgrounds in British reality, but they're also like just massive social media influencer types. I mean, their numbers dwarfed Bananas and CT when they came in, and that's like a calculated thing by MTV to try to expand the market. So I don't know what her original show was, but I mean, you can tell her and Kyle are clearly Instagram influencer material.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Leroy.
He's a classic. This is totally unfair. He is almost kind of like Anissa. Obviously not physically, because he can be dominant when he needs to be, but, you know, he was Banana's number one guy for a long time, and he's never won any of them, and he's just had horrible luck all along. It would be, as much as I want CT to win, Leroy has said this is his last season, it would be awesome to see him win and ride off into the sunset, because he seems like one of the genuinely good dudes on the show.
Yeah, well, a couple things I've got there. One, he, when asked, I guess it was in the Zoom call that ended last season, it was either CT or Bananas who said he was the nicest guy on the show. And second, did you know he was a barber out in Houston?
I did.
You could just go online and book a haircut with him?
Yeah, that's a pretty common thing in the fandom that I see pop up, is like, well, I went to Leroy's shop today, and Cam hangs around a lot too, so they
I think you and I should book a haircut and when this pandemic is over this summer and ride out to Houston and get our hair done by.
I think my hair may confuse. I don't know if you know what to do.
Well, maybe you could just ride with me.
I'd go. Yeah. Get the short haircut.
Yeah.
He grew up or at least lived in Las Vegas for a long time. And mm-hmm. He was a bartender, and so people would see him out, and they always said that he was very easy to hang out with, nice guy. And it was funny because he and TJ, both TJ is a Las Vegas resident or was for a long time, and I think that they would like get a cup of coffee outside the show, but also had to try to not get too friendly and kind of play down that they hang out outside the show.
Yeah, that's good to hear. What about Leroy's partner, Casey? She's from the Big Brother realm.
She is. I wanted her to be good so bad. And she is a good competitor, but she's so boring.
Huh.
You know, they don't.
Well, she's just friendly, I think. I think she's nice. Is that what's making her boring?
No. I think she does seem very friendly. And another, like, this is just a good person, probably, I think. She had a long background in trying to get on reality TV, which is a little odd. You know, I think maybe she just, I mean, it's not odd, but it is to me, but it's not like an odd personality trait to like want to be famous.
Yeah.
She wanted the camera time, but her sound bites are just never that interesting. You kind of notice that they never go to the Big Brother people to like explain what's politically happening in the game or even explain the daily, you know, they're just very like one dimensional interviews.
I got you.
Whereas other people are much more compelling.
Mm-hmm. What about, all right, last grouping, last pair, Cam, who is Leroy's fiance, I think.
I think Cam is the best chance of like the future female dominant player. That said, she came on her first season and like had barely worked out for it. I think she said she just ran a few times before she came on.
Mm.
And she dominated in eliminations. That's where the whole Killa Cam thing started.
Gotcha.
But she's been to one final, I think, maybe two as a team. Never won, never done that well in a final. So I think she's got a lot of bravado. And I know it's a Tinder subject that the dudes often get to have as much arrogance and kind of chest pumping approach to the game, whereas women get judged more harshly on that.
Yeah.
You know, that they need to be whatever our expectations are of them. So I've tried to not do that, but I think she really needs to win this season to back up all the arrogance, you know. It's not a bad thing to be arrogant in a game. It's a reality show, you know.
Right.
Shoot your shot, but she's she needs to win.
All right, her partner Corey,
another dude, he's got all the physical tools to win one of these things, and he just never has. I mean, he did great in last season's final, still lost to Old Man Bananas, but I like Corey. I do think I've liked him since he came on the show.
Yeah, he seems cool.
He's another nice guy. Seems like pretty self-aware, and he's quick to make a self-depreciating joke, which I appreciate. But he's also definitely the franchise guy in some way, because he's tied to like the baby raising shows are on MTV, like him and a former
Raising shows. That's a genre.
It is. It was started with 16 and Pregnant, but they're not all called that anymore. I don't know what him and a former challenge competitor. She was only on one season, but she was great. Named Cheyenne, have a kid together. And that's like on camera all the time. So I think they're attempting some show synergy with Corey, but I don't mind.
I think he has a low key chance of winning the whole thing.
That would not surprise me at all if he, I think he's set out enough of the game and kind of avoided problem spots and then got his skull when he needed to and just avoided danger in a really, sometimes through happenstance and sometimes it seemed planned. And so I think he's got plenty in the tank compared to everybody else here at the end. It would not surprise me if he won.
Coming soon, maybe. It's possible. I don't want to make any promises, so maybe I shouldn't put this on air. I think we might have a special episode as the challenge heads into the finals, or maybe right after the final, much like we did last season on our show here on Taking It Down. If you're a fan of that MTV series, you won't want to miss it. If we can gather some talking heads together, which I think we'll be able to do that.
I think we could get them... Send up the bat signal and they'll come running.
We might even do a special episode 1 week, like an extra episode, a bonus episode of that. We'll see, though. We'll make some plans and maybe get that out to you. But before we wrap, which we're about to do, Adam, what do you think about going into Paramount Plus's version of The Challenge, which is The Challenge All-Stars? You excited?
I am.
Is that too much challenge for you at once?
No.
Okay.
No, not at all. Especially, you know, we're still kind of locked down. You know, my evenings are pretty free. So,
okay.
Very into it. When they first started floating the idea around, it was a very ground up DIY effort. And when they posted the trailer, I was surprised at the production level of everything. You know, they actually took them to Argentina, right? Somewhere in South America.
Okay.
The mountains. I was worried that they were going to do like a let's all get together in Los Angeles and stay in the same hotel, kind of like they did for like Champs versus Pros or Champs versus Stars.
Okay. I got you.
But
yeah.
This is an actual season. I'm excited to see these people.
For listeners, that first episode drops on Paramount Plus on April 1st. That's not an April Fool's joke. They really are. It has 22 old school competitors. And what do you think? Will this clear up the drama issues that you're not seeing, or the interest level that you're not seeing from the Big Brother? This is going to be only challenge competitors, no other shows involved, from what I understand.
And they have a lot of back history together.
It should be
a lot of bad blood. I would think so. And they went through the Real World or Road Rules casting. They know what's good. But they're also, I mean, the prize money is pretty substantial, right? I mean, it's like, I think 500,000, which is way more than these people ever competed for.
Oh.
And a lot of people say that the bigger prizes have kind of minimized the drama each season because they're just trying to stay in shape and win. Because it's $1 million is a lot more than just winning 100,000 or something like that.
Right. I'll make an all too early prediction. The last two competitors sent home on this season of the challenge, which is Anissa and Darrell, are on this 22-member cast of All-Stars.
Surprising casting choices.
Yeah, like, you got to think they're the favorite going in because they just come off this one, and they're probably still a little bit in shape from that, right?
I would think Darrell is a favorite. I think Derek K is anybody that stayed in shape and is still... There's going to be a few folks, if they're not in their 50s, they're really pushing it, and then there's people... still in their, you know, lower 40s, or even like John A and Jimmy are still could be put on the regular show. They're the same age as almost the average age on the normal quote unquote program. So I'm surprised they're on there, but
they're just basically going to make me feel like shit for being 44 and completely out of shape, right?
These dudes are going to show up in shape. For sure.
And Derek is supposedly a wild man. I don't know much about him.
I feel like you probably saw him back in the day.
Road Rules?
I think he was Road... I don't know.
Maybe? Okay.
But he was on a lot of seasons, and he was always the guy that just outperformed his size. You know, I remember like a wrestling thing. It was a daily where he beat... Do you remember Eric? They called him Big Easy. He's on this season. Coming up, just a mountain of a man, but he took him out and then eventually took CT out in this wrestling thing just because he just like the leverage that he can get with his body, he's insane.
And of course, the guy who sort of rounded all this up is one I definitely remember, Mark. He's probably going to be one of the oldest ones on here. Mark seems really good, really in shape from just pictures.
He does,
yeah. So.
And he that's as old school as it gets.
It is. It is. I'm kind of pumped. I'm pumped. And I'm glad it's on streaming. I mean, not that it matters, but that just feels like I'm getting some use out of paying for that streaming service.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, between that and the Real World reunion,
yes,
I think they're doing a good job. They're doing, yeah, I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago, and I'm still on board for that.
Me
I think
too.
It's been very good.
Me too. Well, we are up against our time. We want to thank you all for joining us this week. We're going to be back in 2 weeks, and we're going to talk about that HBO Max release of Godzilla versus Kong. Somehow or another, we're going to talk about that.
You know, there's really two types of people in this world, Blaine. There's Godzillas and there's Kongs. Which one are you? You Kong? You Godzilla?
I think I'm a Kong, yeah. I really do think I'm a Kong. I'm a mammal.
Is this a lion versus panda question?
Yeah. It seems like it, yeah.
There you go.
That'll be in 2 weeks because we'll have an off week. We record on Sunday, and that's our Easter. We might do some family things that day. You guys go do the same. Subscribe to us, Taking It Down, and rate us and review us, and don't miss a thing. We will talk to you all in 2 weeks.